Not So Live from Asteroid G, coated in gold and placed on a bed. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Your buddy, Mike the Ghoul here, back to the series of doing some James Bond, and we got Thunderball we're talking about this time around.
Thunderball and Never Say Never Again, because we're getting two of these cranked out, and these ones seem to fit together better than some. The Connery era is really strange. I was thinking about this while I was warming up my lunch today, which is... Because he left, and they got George Lazenby, and then George Lazenby left after one movie, and they got Connery back, it's like, it's kind of like we have two eras, because we have a Lazenby era, but it's also kind of like we just have this weird footnote in the middle of the Connery era. And we're going to have to cover those separately on their own. But then we also have a weird addendum because of a remake of Thunderball that Connery did 10 years later, and you're like, what the fuck is this franchise doing?
It really gave me vibes of like that meme from The Office of like Pam, I think her name is. It's like, it's the same picture.
It's the same movie, just
in a new skin again.
It's both a different movie and the same exact movie, and it's really confusing. I can see why, although it was successful at the box office, it lost to Octopussy in the year it came out, because it's just weird. So
it's a strange movie.
It is a strange movie. However, before we get to that, I do want to thank our sponsors for this episode, Umbrella Corporation. For over 60 years, one company has been there looking out for you. From cosmetics to chemicals, pharmaceuticals to industrial machinery, transportation, innovation, health and consumer goods, Umbrella has been guiding humanity. We are your first stop on a trip overseas and the last guardian watching your back when you head to bed. We are there to make your life better. Together we rise, and from the ashes, we live again. Umbrella Corporation, our business is life itself. And thank you to Umbrella for this episode. So,
thank you so much.
So, neither of these movies were good. Let me put it this way.
No, they weren't.
And that's the weird thing, is that we have to suffer through Thunderball, and then we have to suffer through Thunderball again. And I hated it both times.
it's just like, you know, Connery is like, he's been Bond for the first, you know, several, like we talked about. He's been finding himself as he goes. Like the James we got in Dr. No is not the James we have now.
No.
And that is a fair point. I don't know if I love where we're going.
That is a fair point. Connery is definitely fully in the role for this movie now. And he will be again for Never Say Never Again. He's on autopilot, I think, for that movie. But he's definitely in the role now. It's just, one, I agree with you. I'm not certain I like the role anymore. Like, I think I liked it best in Goldfinger. And two, it doesn't feel like he really is invested in this movie at all, even though he's doing shit this time around, sort of.
It's really weird. Like, he's figured out who he is when he plays James, and it's basically like, I can just be a pervert.
Yeah, it kind of is. So, functionally, the movie is like, some bad stuff is happening, and then James just so happens to be nearby, and even though he's not ordered to be on the case until later, he's already working the case for reasons. It's like Spectre is really bad at hiding their shit from James Bond.
It's almost like they want him to come and hang out with them or something.
And then they're mad when he shows up. It's like, you're a jilted lover. Do you want me to be here or not? Like, what is... What's your message? What are you saying to me?
You got Spectre and you got James, and I am still not sure which one here is the jilted ex that is toxic and you can't get rid of yet.
Right.
Like, it's crazy.
Right. It's just, it's really weird how this franchise is going. And I think part of the problem is the fact that Spectre does not feel like a good, even though they're iconic, it doesn't feel like a good villain. Like, they are like, well, we have MI6. We need a version of MI6, but evil. And... it's almost like it works better when Spectre's not involved at all, like Auric Goldfinger. He was just a dude being a dipshit. And I liked him better for the fact that he was just a dipshit, you know?
It's for a criminal mastermind organization and a wonderful sponsor of the podcast. We do thank you for that. We do have to critique ever so slightly your choice of henchmen who be henching for you.
Yeah, it's so bad. So James is at a day spa because he needs to go through his physical and clean up his body or whatever. And while he's there, he notices a bad guy with a tattoo, which I'm like, okay, if you're a bad guy and you have a tattoo for an evil organization, step one, hide your tattoo.
Badge of honor, I guess.
Right? Wear a watch over it. Do something. Make sure that someone doesn't notice that you're associated with an evil corporation. And so James starts investigating, and he notices that a body shows up at the day spa, which is where they decide to hide it for some reason. And it's the body of a naval pilot who then also magically shows up to fly the plane because they've duplicated him. And the plane happens to go down with two nuclear warheads on it. And Spectre steals these warheads so that they can then go do something. And that's the problem right there, is they then dick around for an hour and a half not actually doing anything.
They're planning their evil plot. Let them figure it out. Let them cook.
This is so, and that's this is the thing. This is my problem. Is Spectre doesn't Spectre? It's like Trump, which I mean, I know we just did a short that was political, and I hate that. But it's like Trump. I have the concept of a plan. They don't actually have a plan. They worked up to let's steal the nuclear warheads, and then after that, they're like, well, we'll just hold the world hostage and threaten some stuff, but not actually do anything for an hour of our runtime.
Maybe they're inspired by Heath Ledger's Joker. You know, they're just they're chaos. They're just a dog chasing a car. They wouldn't know what to do if they caught it. Like,
which would
they
be clearly, fine.
They clearly was... don't know what to do when they got the weapons.
No, it would be
blow
fine
shit up.
If it was just Blofeld doing dumb shit like Claw and Inspector Gadget, and then like crap blows up in his face. That's one thing. But this is clearly a multinational evil organization running under the scenes, doing everything they can to make money. And they're really fucking bad at their jobs.
I don't know who's bankrolling these people, but like it's a whole bunch of like, you know, B squad, you know, superhero sidekicks that just didn't make it and got jilted or whatever. Like,
yeah,
I mean,
I do. I feel
aside
bad.
Aside from Blofeld, you're right. They're all just kind of fucking incompetent.
They are. I feel bad for them because clearly these are guys that want to be in the CIA and want to be MI6, Mossad, whatever else. Like, even the Russian organization that James easily bests. These guys aren't good enough for them. They are C-Squad at best. And they're trying their hardest, and they fucking fail every time. Largo is the guy with the rich dude who gets the warhead so he can go plan out his thing, and he has a penchant for sharks, which is not nearly as interesting as a penchant for gold. I'm just going to put that out there.
And, sharks are cool, though. Sharks are cool.
And he has, as his niece, quote-unquote, his lover, whatever you want to call her, Domino. And Domino is the sister of the naval guy that, like, they killed, then stole the warheads with his copy, and then killed the copy. So, no matter what, Domino has lost her brother in any form that you have. And
twice.
She, like, and you're like, okay, so not only do you kill the guy whose sister you're shtipping, then you keep the sister around and get shocked when she double-crosses you when she learns that you killed her brother. And because of her, James is easily able to bring the whole plan down.
I mean, you know, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, right? Like, you know, the true powerhouses are the Bond girls, and they showed in this one.
Sure, I guess. But it's again, it's this thing of, like, I don't even feel like this is a good Bond story, because, like, Leiter could have just shown up and taken care of these guys. Hell, he does most of the work for Bond in this movie anyway. Bond just kind of hangs out around in Jamaica or the Florida Keys or wherever the fuck this takes place in, and does some stuff, looks cool, and then the plot explodes, and yay, we won. But it's really dumb.
It's evil corporation trying to... They don't know what they're doing, and... They don't. What was she to him? Like, you know, the Domino. Was she bodyguard? Was she...
I feel
I'm
like...
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I feel like this is one of those things that they had to... Because of the age difference between Largo and Domino, that probably they had to, like, soften it from what the story actually was supposed to be. She's supposed to be her lover. And even when I look at the Wikipedia page about this and look at it, it's niece in quotes, because it's supposed to be implied that he's her caretaker and also her lover. But they make it explicit in the remake, and that's, I guess, better for the story. But it's also still, it's very confusing for plotting, because it's like, he clearly lusts after her, so if she actually is his niece, then that's really gross. But if she's not his niece, then I don't understand this relationship at all.
I don't know, it's weird. We get Q, though. Q comes back, you know, with his gadgets and stuff. Fun times there. Good to always see Q.
Sure. Like, his gadgets are at least somewhat more grounded this time around. He's got, like, you know, a tracking device and a nuclear detector and a Geiger counter. And
the Geiger counter is staple. You know, it's still the 60s. Like, we're still Cold War time. You know, everybody's got to be worried about that Geiger counter still.
Yeah. So, But it's like, yeah, it didn't work for me. But I do have notes, so we can go over the notes and talk about what's good and bad in more detail. So the barrel shot with Connery is at least a little better, but I gotta tell you, it's pretty clear Connery doesn't know how to hold a gun. Because, like, he does this big telegraphed swing for his shot, and you're just like, if you were shooting at a guy that had you dead to rights, you're dead already, dude. It was bad.
I mean, it's a barrel shot. It's iconic. Sure.
It is. The opening, it doesn't connect to the rest of the movie at all. James is just, like, taking on a bad guy, and the bad guy, so like a nemesis of his, who's basically unnamed. We don't care about the nemesis.
But he
goes and investigate because the nemesis is supposedly dead, and his wife shows up, and the wife goes to see him buried, and then James shows up at the wife's house, and suddenly it's actually the bad guy, and he's in drag. And in my head, I had the Austin Powers thing of, he's a man, baby!
Yeah, it's so funny. Like, that's some of the most fun I'm having with going back and seeing it. It's really seeing, like, you know what, Mike Myers pulled from that again. Like, it's so much fun to do that little walkthrough, though.
The Austin Powers parody is better on these moments than this stuff is, and I'm really gonna enjoy when we finally go and watch Austin Powers.
It's gonna make them so much more fun to watch
pay off for us. James Bond fleeing the scene after killing his nemesis on a jetpack is so stupid. Like, it's a really dumb moment in this movie.
It's some really interesting practical effects there that they tried to pull off, too.
Some,
like,
green
screen,
or really rear projection screen, some wire work, and just Sean Connery trying to sell it, and he can't.
No.
The Aston Martin from Goldfinger shows up again for a couple seconds so he can have his armored car, which I think is a nice bit of continuity, even if it doesn't make any sense because he left it stranded in Switzerland.
Yeah, I don't know.
I want to be the tow truck guy working for Q that has to go drive over and get the car and bring it back. We can't lose our assets.
Yeah. They always say don't lose the car. And, you know, for some reason, the car always ends up where he is because he always loses the car. So
this is notably the last of Terrence Young's movies directing for the franchise. And I think it shows that he does not have a good grasp on what makes a good Bond movie. He helped to cement the formula. But the one movie so far we've watched that wasn't his was Goldfinger, and that was the best of the set.
Yeah, agreed.
We get the proper James Gunn opening titles here. Song for the movie, bold colors, silhouettes of naked ladies. It's pretty much cemented itself at this point.
Yeah, the iconic song for the movie thing really, you know, to your point, takes its form here. And this will be a staple of the series moving forward.
Take it like Thunderball or whatever the lyric was. I'm like, I'm not sure what that means, but you clearly had to work the title into your song. So good on you to try at least.
Chef's kiss.
Yep. We get a bunch of Spectre agents like number 7, number 12, number 13. And I wonder, when one Spectre agent dies, do the rest get promoted up in rank?
Maybe.
I mean, we don't see 3 or 5 on this list when they're listed off, but got to think there's got to be a new number 3 at some point. And how does the pecking order work? Is there like an org chart for this? Are they having like group meetings down certain paths or something?
I mean, it felt like it was almost like a Thursday, so we got the odd numbered henchmen in here today kind of thing, right?
We'll meet with the Greek letters on another day.
Semper Fi, everybody.
The film introduces a downbeat version of the Bond theme when he's going off doing investigations, which I actually liked. I felt like that worked better instead of just doing the upbeat version.
If it's better to play that than like the din-it. Like, I'm just walking to check my mail at a hotel kind of thing.
Oh, I need to tie my shoe. Din-it-o, boom, boom, din-it-o, din-it-o. Yeah, it's really bad. So on the subject that you were talking about where we don't like James Bond's character, he's a real douchebag sexual predator this time around. He forces himself on the spa worker that was talking with him. And, like, it's real rapey in that scene. And then later when he's talking with Domino, his big compliment to her was, "You swim like a man." And I'm like, what a fucking asshole.
I mean, when he said that, it made me think of Quint from fucking Jaws. Like, here's the swimming with bow-legged women. I'm like, oh my god. What was the fucking 60s? Jesus.
This movie has a plodding pace. I had to write this down. James Bond spends way too long at the day spa just dicking around and dicking a woman that doesn't want him. Later, the film takes a long time showing a Spectre's heist of the nukes. It then just goes on and on for 20 minutes that could be cut here. Then the climactic underwater sequence is so plot. Like, you know, they spent hundreds of thousands of pounds on this sequence. Yeah, they were very proud of their big underwater climax. And it's like the slowest version of action you'll ever get until we have to go into Moonraker. It's just bad.
Underwater, like, it's not... The technology for that hasn't even gotten a tremendous amount better now. It's just, it's a tough thing to do without, like, some kind of CGI. And when you don't have that now, it just looks awkward. It was an expensive shot. I get it. But, like, if that's your staple for this movie and that's where you're putting your budget...
Yeah, it reminds me of... This is a movie no one talks about. The Matthew McConaughey almost Indiana Jones Adventures Sahara, where they spent they spent like $2 million on a shot that they ended up not using because it didn't work. And this feels like they spent so much money on a shot, and they all sat there afterwards going, oh my god, this doesn't work, and we have to use it anyway. They should have just gone in and post and filmed a different climax. That would have been better than what we got here. It's...
Funny you mentioned Sahara too. Like, you know, fun fact, it is like, I think widely accepted that that movie is historically like the worst movie of all time for the price that it cost to make. Like, to your point with how much money was wasted. I still think it was a fun movie.
It's a
dude.
Fun, like, movie. I enjoyed that movie. Yeah, that movie's great. We'll talk about that movie at some point.
We'll do that. Chris will love to watch that again. But I mean, like, how do you get, like, you know, McConaughey, Steve Zahn, Penelope Cruz, Del Rolando, the Merovingian, get all these people that were all like really hype in movies that all occurred around this time, and then just have it epically fail. But like, I still had fun with the movie.
That's a good movie. That's a good movie. Unlike this movie, that movie was great. So I enjoyed the hell out. It's dumb, but it's fun. This is just dumb and bad.
Pull to Panama.
The movie wastes a lot of time having Bond and Largo circle each other for a while. It's like they really want to get that Goldfinger feel to it, but none of that energy comes across, and the cat and mouse vibe is never there. It's just like Bond randomly shows up and Largo's like, oh, well, let's try and kill him again, and then it doesn't work. He's like, oh, okay, well, we'll just wait for him to show up. It's bad.
I was waiting for them to kiss, I'm not going to lie.
No, that would have been more interesting to me. Like, the plotting pace, somehow this movie can even make a chase through a crowded parade boring. Like, nothing works here.
The Junkanoo was a fun scene. Like, that's a big thing in Caribbean culture. You know, I was in the Bahamas once for a Junkanoo, and it was kind of fun. So, like, you know, you got to get that in there for the cultural piece. But it was weird, man. Again, to your point, it was just weird.
It's all of it's weird. The small moments that worked are few and far between in a movie that just doesn't function. So, because of that, I was really kind of hoping that when I went into Never Say Never Again, which is functionally a remake of this movie.
Essentially.
They're both based on the same book, and so you would think that this version would function better than the other one, because they had a chance to do a redo. Kevin McClory, who had partial rights to the book, got to make his version here, and he could redo everything, and the only thing that he had to do was carry the story over with some character names being the same, and have a Bond in it. And he decided to go with Sean Connery again, meaning that Sean Connery got to remake his own movie, which is weird enough on its own.
Yeah.
And so we have Never Say Never Again that we're doing somewhat out of sequence because it makes sense to do it here.
Yeah.
And it's one of the two non-Eon films, and it's somehow just as bad as the movie it's remaking.
I mean, this, if you thought, you know, Thunderball got to be a hot mess, this movie, like, you really, like, I think, and I'm not going to steal your thunder, but you made a great point in your notes about the vodka that James traveled with. And I was like, no, that was Sean Connery. That was his tip. You want me to come back? I'm going to do that, but I'm going to be drunk the entire time.
I think it's the only way to get through this movie. And the sad thing is, it actually starts off decently enough. We get an opening section with the theme song written for the movie about Never Say Never Again. No barrel sequence, no sexy girls, just James going off on a, which we don't realize is a training mission, it's a fake out, but he goes off on like this rescue mission to save a kidnapped daughter of some higher up person, and then he's double crossed by her, and we realize it's a training mission, and that he's coming back into the field, kind of like Daniel Craig in the later films, to be James Bond again, even though MI6 doesn't feel like the 007s are necessary. And as part of his coming back into the field, he has to go and have a physical at a day spa, and while he's at the day spa, he stumbles onto a Spectre plot, and it's about stealing nuclear warheads. The plot to steal the nuclear warheads is slightly different, but it still involves Domino's brother going and stealing the warheads and then getting killed. And Then James follows him to the Caribbean, which then goes to the French tropics as well. But still, mm-hmm. he follows them, he follows Largo, he follows the nukes, and he decides to befriend Domino so that he can then use her to get in good with Largo and then get the nukes back. And it's like, it's that entire thing from 22 Jump Street. It's the same case, do the same thing. That's this movie.
Yeah. And we get Fatima Blush here. If Fatima Blush is supposed to be crazy, like, you know, she did not come across as crazy to me in this one. I'll say that.
She comes across as stupid.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. But my issue with this movie is that in some ways it's better paced, but it's based on a movie that has even less of a clue about what to actually do with itself. So it runs around a lot, but it's a bunch of random shit that doesn't connect at all.
Yeah, it's a hot mess. It's all over the place. But I was not a fan of the jumping everywhere. The shots just didn't work for me in this one. I like Bond, and this was shaping up quite to be one of my least favorite that we've watched at this point.
Yeah, it's just because it doesn't do anything with itself. I think that was my takeaway from this, is that because it's the same movie all over again. I have less to say about the actual plot and the function of it. It's like, it's professionally done. Irvin Kershner did this movie, and he worked on like Empire Strikes Back. He has a solid eye. There's some good special effects. There's some things about it that work. But on a basic level, this is the exact same movie we just watched. And you would think that would mean that they would take the opportunity to do something different. You're not Eon Pictures. You're going up against an Eon Pictures Bond movie. The choices are do exactly what the Bond movies are doing, or try and do something different that's actually interesting. And they go with option A, and it's boring.
You know, and it's still like that stuff that like we talk about now with films. Like, where's the original thought here? You had what could have taken a story that was done and redone it in a different way that like had a different vision, and it could have been cool. And you just told the same story over again, but just not even really as good as the first one.
No, because it's doing the same beats, and it just it plods through the main plot beats and then gets distracted over and over again by some really, really dumb shit. For instance, when Spectre gets introduced, the film grinds to an absolute halt. Anytime we cut to Spectre, the film grinds to a halt. Like, it doesn't know how to work the villains into the movie. It's kind of okay working with Bond when he's just kind of sauntering around, and I kind of think that's because Connery was, you know, he's autopilot in this movie, but he at least has enough presence as Bond to be able to make it work. But Spectre is a complete dud here, and that includes Largo, who I'm not even sure what he's doing as a villain. He kind of preens and prances around and acts evil, but you never get a sense that he comes together as a villain at all.
Yeah, very weak villain to me. There are some really good Bond villains we're going to get as we progress through this, and he's just not one of them. He's just not a random... He feels like, you know, Spectre... We're talking about how Spectre is like a seaside for any kind of like, you know, henchman corporation or whatever. And, you know, shout out to our sponsors. We appreciate you. But at the same time, like, you got some people working for you that do some really dumb shit.
For no reason. It's just, he's not an interesting villain. And we've had him twice now. He's been disinteresting both times.
I don't understand him. I don't get what he's about.
No, he sucks. I did enjoy the fact that Bond travels around with a briefcase full of vodka and expensive snacks. Not clothing, not weapons, just caviar and absolute vodka, which was funny to me. It's dumb, but it was funny. Yeah. And he doesn't force himself on the spa lady this time. He actually woos her with the caviar and vodka, which I guess is a step up.
I mean, it's the 80s. We can't go full rapey anymore,
I guess not. Yeah, he had over 10 years to try and get to that. He had to figure out how something... Bond getting involved in the main plot does at least make a little more sense. He stumbles onto the case accidentally, and not because the Spectre agents are stupid. But it still doesn't make Spectre look good in the process. They like, why are you doing this at a day spa that you allow MI6 agents to come to? Either you control the day spa and it's an evil day spa, like Dr. Evil would make, or you do the cosmetic surgery to fix his eye so that he can steal the missiles, because that's the whole way he does it. And then you immediately ship him off so that MI6 can't find him. They did the worst of both worlds here, and it's dumb.
Yeah, it's just like they, for being a criminal mastermind organization, they just looking for trouble.
Yeah,
they let anybody coming in, anybody hanging out. Like, how have they progressed to be this international force that they are? And I know, like, movie magic, I get it. But, like, I mean, you got to give your villains a little bit more that they've been written so far. I mean, this is some real Dr. Evil, like, kind of shit.
Yes, on that subject, Spectre agent uses a patsy to steal the nuclear warheads, then throws a snake into his car afterwards to kill him, only to then use an explosive device on a remote detonator to cover her tracks. So why use the snake? Or even try and have a patsy. Like, if you want him to be your patsy and to, like, take the blame, you don't immediately kill him. And if you do so, you don't do it in the most dumb and convoluted way possible. Like, it's three steps beyond idiocy.
Yeah, it's not the Rube Goldberg machine of death. It's the Russian nesting doll of just weird decisions.
Yeah, right. Again, showing the Fatima Blush as an idiot. Domino is introduced in a weird, jazzy, porny dance sequence that has no bearing on her character or the movie. All it shows is that Largo likes to see her do jazzercise. And I'm like, this, and it's not even character development we need. We can get that he lusts after her in the next sequence where he and Domino and James Bond all meet up. This sequence adds nothing to the movie except to show off that Kim Basinger is hot, I guess?
I suppose so, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Your reputation has preceded you, which makes this both a film building on Connery's time as Bond and yet a direct remake of one of his own films. Like, the line in context doesn't make sense in either respect. Either it's a remake and we're supposed to forget the Thunderball exists, or we're supposed to acknowledge that everything that Connery did as James Bond exists in this timeline as well, which in that case means that if your reputation has preceded you, then you should expect that Bond is going to know your exact plan. Like,
so you're saying Spectre is the definition of insanity, doing the same thing and expecting a different result.
Yeah, that's a line that shouldn't be in this movie because it pulls you out of the movie and makes you think about how does this movie connect to everything we now know? Yeah, there's a remote-controlled shark in the movie that feels straight out of Austin Powers. Again, Austin Powers. Like, frickin' laser beams and remote controls on my sharks.
Yep, you'll love it. And you know what? Mike Myers did it better, again.
Yep. On the subject of James Bond being rapey, however, then James Bond goes and gives a non-consensual massage to Domino, pretending to be her massage therapist. And, like, even 20 years in, he's a real winner.
And again, we don't get too political on this show, but boy, would my man be, like, first in line at Epstein Island, I'm just saying.
You have a feeling that this version of James Bond definitely was friends with Jeffrey Epstein. There's no question about it.
You get that feel for sure.
Yeah, and then afterwards, she smiles when she realizes he wasn't her massage therapist. And you're like, that's gross from both of them.
Yeah. Like, ooh, you were trying to I liked it kind of thing. Like, that was, it's just weird. It's weird. It's weird. It's weird. Weird, weird.
The big sequence between James Bond and Largo, where they finally meet and go head to head, is a video game duel that has no tension to it whatsoever.
Yeah, I don't understand what they were even...
No.
I don't understand what this was about. Was this just like the show off technology or something? Because we've gone through like Baccarat and these other games that are just like highbrow, like I don't even know how to pronounce them half the time, to now we're playing video games in the 80s, I guess. That's the competition.
And it's a bad video game. Like, it's 3D presented and it looks cool, but then you actually look at the mechanics of it and you're like, this game is stupid as shit. It's awful.
Yeah, agreed.
Yep. I did notice that sharks and horses get seriously injured in this movie. It makes me think they didn't have PETA on set to help them out with that.
Whew, right? Yeah. Like, I hope they had a good union, you know, the animals. Goodness gracious. Usually that's, maybe this is a reason why you now have at the end of films, like, no animals were harmed in the making of this, because, like, there's some questionable times.
Animals were really harmed in the making of this movie.
It was questionable.
Largo has a pendant made for Domino that acts as a map to the exact location where he hid the second bomb. First of all, there's no reason for him to make that pendant. Secondly, there's absolutely no reason for him to give it to Domino, especially after he just had her brother killed. Like, is he taunting her but by giving her this thing that looks cheap, but is also, like, the secret to his plan? And he already knows where his missiles are because he doesn't need this pendant to tell him where it is. It's like a game to him, but it's a really dumb game.
That's what I was saying. It's almost like, you know, very sociopathic serial killer kind of thing. Like, I'm going to give you something that, like, I know what it means and it's going to seem useless to you, but this is a trophy that you're going to be wearing that I know you're wearing or something. I don't know. It was just weird again. Like,
it didn't work.
I didn't understand the tone of it.
No, it gets back to the idea that this is a movie that's a collection of ideas without any of them having connective tissues. Like, James Bond gets fired out of a missile so that he can then jetpack his way down to the island on a stealth mission, no less. He fires off blatantly at a rocket nearby. The rocket opens up, he jetpacks down, and it's supposed to work on a stealth mission? Like, what?
Yeah, I mean, let's just not watch the rocket launch and then, you know, because no one watches them fly after they take off, right? That's it. We just look away.
Yeah. Like, Dr. Evil, I'm going to walk away and assume everything's okay.
Well, what's wrong? Everything is going to go to plan. What's the problem?
Yeah. And then at the very end of the movie, James says he's never going to go back to the service, but he gives the camera a knowing wink as if to say, oh, we know I'll be back. And then, no, Connery did not come back. So, like, they were planning on doing a sequel to this movie because it was just successful enough, and I don't know what story they would have done. Presumably they would have made a new story because you can only remake this so many times. And then, when that didn't work out, and then Timothy Dalton left the series, they tried to remake this movie again with Dalton, and you're like, I'm really glad that didn't happen. Because I don't think I could have taken this stupid movie for a third time.
No thanks. It's just like, you know, I guess that was the nod of like, you know, James will be back, but like, you know, it might not be me. Like, I don't know. Maybe that was a little send off kind of thing. But
well, wanted Connery back for it. The whole reason.
That's the thing. He said no. Like, that's what made me it made it even more confusing to me, because that almost felt like he was doing that. Like, that wink, it won't be me though, but they wanted him back, and he had maybe they had some kind of verbal commitment, and he backed out of it. I don't know.
It leaves this film in a really weird place because it's both Connery's last time as Bond, but also a remake, but also not, and also doesn't connect, but it sort of plays on his legacy. If you were a fan watching this in the theater, I would just think you'd be hideously confused.
Yeah, it's confusing.
I even had to think when I was talking about Thunderball, whether or not, like, James was there to, like, have his cholesterol done, or was that the older version, or was it both? Like, it's so hard to remember because these movies blur together. They're both bad. I can tell you right now, of the five we've watched so far, I'm only going to watch Goldfinger ever again. These movies blur together. They're both bad. I hated them both.
Not a fan, and you're 100% right. Goldfinger is the only one I would watch again. It was a classic.
It is a classic. I agree.
That was where James felt like James. And I think to your point, like, James almost feels like he's strongest in movies. And we're going to get some good ones with Spectre. We will. But he almost feels strongest in movies that are with these one-off kind of villains. You know, it feels almost like it's a better story. It feels almost stronger.
It does.
To me so far.
Doing their own thing where they can just go head-to-head with him. That's what we need. We need more of that. We need less of Spectre. Which is funny. Yeah. But, I mean, it's also kind of makes sense. If we jump ahead a little, when we get to the Daniel Craig era, those movies really fall off when Spectre comes into play.
Yeah.
So maybe we just need less Spectre. I'm sorry to our sponsors, but...
You know what? They sponsored us. We're moving on. You know, sometimes you got to make tough decisions in this world, you know?
Yeah, we got the Umbrella Corporation now. They've never done anything wrong at all.
No, they've never done anybody wrong ever.
No, nothing. No. Don't have anything to worry about.
Nope.
Oh, well. Next time we're going to go over the last of the main Connery continuity, which is You Only Live Twice. We'll do that one on its own, because I feel like we should mark the ending of his era. Even though it's not the ending of his era, because then we're going to have to talk about him again later. But for what was expected to be the end of his run, we'll talk about You Only Live Twice. And then after that, we'll get to George Lazenby in his own episode, which I feel like we really just need to go in deep on his story.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So that'll be fun for next time. Once again, want to thank our sponsors, Umbrella Corporation. Our business is life itself. This has been Not So Live from Asteroid G, wondering when I'm going to get my own remote-controlled shark. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
And your buddy, Mike the Ghoul, going to go bust out his jetpack from the garage and take a ride on that because, you know, science is fun.
Connery did it twice. You get to do it twice, too.
I do.
We will see you all next time.